Thank you all for coming today. We're very lucky to have Mrs. Niebuhr with us to talk about sentences and to give us some advice for varying the kinds of sentences we use once we know what exactly a sentence is. So please enjoy Ms. Niebuhr's talk and take notes.
Well, thank you, Matt, for putting together this wonderful colloquia. Though I haven't been able to attend, I've been watching all of the videos online. I've been actually really challenged and inspired in my own writing. There's always more to learn. So my talk today is going to get specific and technical. We're going to talk about clauses and conjunctions, phrases, simple, complex, compound, and compound complex sentences. Right? So sounds pretty exciting, right? I actually think it's super exciting, but I'm a grammar nerd and I'm just excited by the fact that there are sentences and there are different kinds of sentences. It's pretty cool. But before we jump into all of that, I want to talk briefly about the amazing thing that is the sentence itself. Right, we use sentences all the time, carelessly and constantly, often without really attending to the sentence itself. And sometimes in a university setting, right, so much of our focus is on content and argument that the sentence, which is the very vehicle for the argument, kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Right, but sentences are extraordinarily powerful things, right, and worthy of attention in their own right. And sentences are empowering, for they allow us to both join ideas together, right, and then express those ideas to other people. So individual words identify objects. I have a chair, desk, the floor, wall, teacher, students. Now, a sentence, right, can allow me to take all of those individual and disparate units and put them together into a unity so that I can then say, right, the student is sitting on the chair, the teacher is standing on the floor in front of the students. So that might not seem all that exciting, right? It's kind of boring sentences. But what if I have a different set of objects, like love, the soul, good, movement. Right, a sentence then allows me to unite all of those disparate objects into a whole. It allows me to say, love is the movement of the soul towards the good. Right, so there I am, I'm defining love, and I'm orienting it towards both the good and the soul. I'm creating unity out of my sentence by relating different things. So I'm establishing order out of the chaos of sensation and experience, right? We have lots of things kind of thrown at us, and we tend to see things in individual ways. And a sentence is allowing us to establish and create order. Now, those sentences that I can create also have a persuasive power, right? They can convince someone else, speak to someone else. A well-formed sentence invites others to share that sentence with us. So to share our joining of ideas, to agree with our linguistic reordering of the world. Right, we can't really make arguments or even have conversations by just throwing words at people. I can't just stand up here and shout at you, love, good, soul, chair. It doesn't really work. It doesn't convey anything. I have to actually form them into a sentence to be able to reach you. So a sentence is a way that the speaker or writer can share a kind of linguistic space with the listener or the reader. We're sort of coming together around the sentence. There's something really communal about it. Now, part of harnessing the incredible power of a sentence is understanding what a sentence is, the basic types of sentences, and then what kind of effects those sentences have. Okay, so now bear with me for a little bit because we're going to get kind of technical. So first, can anyone give me a definition of a sentence? Any definition, anything, yes?
A complete thought.
Okay, very good, a complete thought. Does anyone have anything further?
A subject and predicate.
Okay, perfect, yep, exactly. So put those two together and you have a sentence. Right, a sentence is a sequence of words that expresses a complete thought, right, through the combination of a subject and verb. And the subject and verb combination is called predication, or as you so accurately stated. So predication is when we have a subject doing something or having something done to them. For example, the knight fights. Right? There, the knight is a subject and he's doing something, he's fighting. Or I could say, the knight is attacked. There again, the knight is the subject. In this case, something is being done to him, right? He's being attacked. Now, when you have predication, when you have a subject and verb, then you have what is called a clause. Now, a clause is a sequence of words that includes, right, a subject and verb. And there are two types of clauses, an independent clause and dependent clause. So an independent clause, right, as you can sort of tell from the very name, right, can stand on its own. It forms a complete sentence. The knight fights is a complete sentence. I could put a period there, and you would know what I'm saying. Now, dependent clause, again, from the name, depends. It can't actually stand on its own. It needs something. It needs some completion. So, if I change the sentence and I said, if the knight fights, and put a period there, well, if the knight fights, then what? I don't know. You know, does he get attacked by the dragon? Does he save the princess? You know, does he eat lunch? We don't know. So it's kind of left up in the air. Now, I'll talk a little bit more about dependent clauses when we get to complex sentences and to the compound complex sentences, because they come up again. It's really fun. All right, now, quick side note. Clauses are different than phrases. So a phrase is a sequence of words that works together to form a verbal unit, like a clause. But it doesn't have a subject and verb, or it doesn't have predication. You could have a subject, you could have a verb in the phrase, but you're not going to have the two of them together. Right? It's putting them together that makes a clause. So you have a prepositional phrase, right, in the house, or you can have a participial phrase, entering the room. So those are phrases. So the different types of sentences that I'm going to talk about all express complete thoughts because they're all sentences, right? And they all have independent clauses in order to be a sentence at all. They are different according to the relationship, to the number of and relationship between the clauses. So in order to write a good sentence, right, you have to have your clauses under control. So sometimes when I'm reading sentences, I'm a tutor in the writing lab, you hit a sentence and you kind of feel like you're trying to wrangle cats. Like there's just sort of, the clauses are trying to run away and escape from you, and I'm always trying to like bringing them back in and imposing, you know, some kind of order. I'm trying to herd them along. So you, as the writer, right, need to do that for your reader. You need to herd those sentences or herd your clauses, keeping them together so the reader can follow you. Okay. So, we have four types of sentences. So if you look at your handout there, you'll see that the first is the simple sentence, which consists of just one independent clause, right? One subject and verb, one predication. So I have, God created the heavens and the earth. Now I should add, right, just because it's simple doesn't mean it's unimportant, and that's a pretty momentous statement to make there. Right, that God created the heavens and the earth. So simple doesn't mean necessarily simplistic. It just has to do with the structure of the clauses. Okay. Now I could add additional phrases to the short sentence, and I could kind of play with their placement. That's where you can kind of have fun. So I could put a prepositional phrase at the beginning of the sentence. You'll see that there on the handout, right? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. I could stick one in the middle if I wanted to. God, out of love, created the heavens and the earth. I could add a participial phrase at the end. God created the heavens and the earth, forming them out of nothing. I could even make the simple sentence longer, for a simple sentence need not be short. So I could say, in the beginning, the divine, all-powerful, holy, perfect, loving, merciful, wise, eternal, forgiving, and just God created the heavens and the earth, forming them out of nothing. Now, so despite all of these variations, all the sentences are simple because they have one predication, or they have one independent clause. God created. That's the foundation of the sentence. And that's what you need to find when you're looking at a sentence. It's foundation. If you can find that, then you can understand the sentence and kind of see how everything else sort of radiates from that. If you think as the center of the wheel, right, you have the spokes coming off that. So you have to find the center, and then you can understand how everything else is working. Now, the short sentence, it can be clear and direct, sort of a factual statement or a declaration of an event or of the placement of something in a category, like to define something. So I could say God is a spiritual being, not material. So there I'm putting God in the category, right, of spiritual things. So again, you can do a lot of really good work with a simple sentence. With second type of sentence is the compound sentence. Now, the compound sentence joins two independent clauses. So you'll see that on your handout as well. So God created the heavens and the earth, and he saw that they were good. Now, in this sentence, right, we have two predications: God created and he saw. Two separate actions. Both of them could stand on their own as sentences. I could say, as I did, God created the heavens and the earth, period. And I could say, he saw that they were good, period. Right? They make sense on their own, but I'm choosing to put them together. And I put them together with what's called a coordinate conjunction. Right? Co is a Latin prefix, means with. And then ordinate, right, meaning order. So I'm ordering these things with each other or together, putting them into a balanced and measured relationship. And that's the effect of a compound sentence. It's a sort of equalizing kind of sentence. These two different things here are of the same importance, and I'm joining them together so that the reader can see that they're both equally important. The King James Bible employs compound sentences beautifully. God created the heavens and the earth, and he saw that they were good, and. All of those actions of God, right, are of equal importance. They're all being put together, coordinate conjunctions. Okay. Now, the third type of sentence is the complex sentence. And the complex sentence is the great glory of academic writing. The complex sentence is made up of at least one independent clause and one dependent clause. Right, so remember, a dependent clause is... It's a quiz. Yeah, go ahead.
Something that can't stand on its own.
Okay, good. Good start. Yeah, something that can't stand on its own. Can we be a little bit more precise? Okay, very good, yeah. A predication that can't stand on its own. So you have a subject and a verb joined together, but you can't just leave them by themselves, right? They're not responsible. So if you look at the third example right on your handout, we have God called the heavens and earth good because he created them. Now, God called is an independent clause. Right? Again, I could put a period there. God called the heavens and earth good, period, bam. But because he created is dependent, right? So because what? I don't know. You have to add more information, right? So again, if I go to the store and just left it there, well then what? I don't know. I will spend too much money? I will die? No. Who knows? There's a lot left uncertain. You leave the reader hanging. And in general, you don't want to leave the reader hanging. Now, because an if are subordinate conjunctions, so sub is another Latin prefix, means under. And ordinate again, so it means under. So in this case, right, I'm ordering the clauses, one clause under another. So I might be saying this clause is more important than another clause, or this clause depends on, right? Can't actually happen without the other clause. And subordinate conjunctions write our words like, because, and if, and also when, since, although, those kinds of things. Now, the complex sentence, as I said, establishes a kind of hierarchical order. It allows for nuance and qualification, and this is why it's so incredibly essential for academic writing. Right? You know, just think about the thesis statements that you're making. In general, you're not just saying Achilles is this, right? Or God is this. Right? You're actually making causal connections, right? Achilles is X because of Y, right? Or although Achilles says he is angry, he actually acts as if he is afraid. Now, that sentence there, right, can convey a problem, which is something that Dr. Baldwin talked a lot about in her presentation. Right? It can heighten the tension of your claim. So I said, although Achilles says he's angry, he actually acts as if he is afraid. And I could have put those two clauses together as a compound sentence. But I could have just said, Achilles says he is angry, and he actually acts as if he's afraid. Could have done that, right? But then it would have been sort of discrete, again, discrete events. One thing, and then the other. But by using although, I'm bringing them into this really complex and interesting relationship, and I'm almost saying three things. Telling you three things. But I'm telling you that Achilles is angry, or that he says he's angry. I'm also telling you that he actually acts as if he's afraid. But then I'm also telling you those two things are in tension with one another, that Achilles' words aren't actually lining up with his actions. So I'm doing a whole lot with just this one sentence. So that's the kind of sentence, right, that a thesis statement will so very often be, because it allows you for that kind of complexity. Now, the fourth type of sentence is the compound complex sentence. As you can tell from the name, right, basically you just take the compound sentence and the complex sentence and put them together, and you have the compound complex sentence. It's kind of a lot to say. So this has at least two independent clauses, right, making it compound. And it has one dependent clause, which makes it complex. So, let's look at number four in your handout. God, who is all-powerful and all-knowing, created the heavens and the earth, and he saw that they were good. So, can anyone tell me what are the independent clauses? Okay, very good. Yep, that's one. He saw that they were good. God created the heavens. Okay, very good. Yep. So those are my two independent clauses. I could put those in sentences. They would be just fine on their own. All right. Now my dependent clause, actually I want to focus on the first one, which is who is all-powerful and all-knowing. Now, this is a special kind of dependent clause. It's called a relative clause. And a relative clause is formed with a relative pronoun, like who, whom, which, or that. It's going to point back to the previous subject. So in this sentence, who does the who refer to? Sorry? God. Okay, very good. Exactly, yeah. I couldn't just say, who is all powerful and knowing, period. Right? You would literally be asking the question, well, who? Who on earth are you talking about? So you can see, right, that the compound complex sentence can combine both sort of the balance and the equality of the compound sentence, bringing those two things together, right, God created and he saw, and then for a kind of hierarchy as well. So God, who is all-powerful and knowing. So it's allowing for like even more intricate relationships between ideas. So just think of the kinds of thesis statements you could create if you were using a compound complex sentence. I just showed you from that very simple, relatively, not simple, shouldn't use that word, straightforward complex sentence, right? How much was going on, and how many different things I was telling you as the reader. So you can do even more things then with this compound complex sentence. Okay, so that was a lot of information that I just threw at you. So are there any questions?
How does a sentence like, the teacher teaches, smiles, yells, and helps, what is that?
That's a great question. Okay. So she asked, right, if you have a sentence like the teacher smiles, yells, and laughs or something, or gives you an F, is that a simple sentence? The way that you formulated, yes. Because it's still dealing with single predication, you're still thinking of the subject as teacher who's performing all of these actions. You're not really separating them out. So I could have said, God created the heavens and the earth and saw that they were good. I could have left out the he, and then it would be a simple sentence. It would just be emphasizing the fact that God, singular, right, does sort of these two actions. But by making them two different clauses, I'm just really emphasizing kind of the, maybe my point is it's a temporal point, so he did this first, and then he did this. So it's about, yeah, it's about emphasis. That's a really great question. We're actually going to see some examples of that later on. Now, if I said God created and saw, then it's still simple because God is the subject of both. I'm not making another predication. I'm not putting together an extra subject and verb. So you can think of it, I still have subject plus verb. Plus verb plus verb. Compound sentence would be more like subject plus verb and subject plus verb. Sometimes it's hard to tell like what the exact difference is between the situation and is the author making a strong point by choosing to make it compound or it's simple. Not always. Sometimes, you know, it just sounds good. It sounds better to do it one way or the other. But sometimes it really does matter and you really are making a point. So, great question. Okay. So, what does all this information have to do with writing well? Good writing is based on good words and good sentences, right? On choosing good words and combining them into good sentences. So just as a musician combines individual notes into chords, a writer must combine individual words into sentences. And just as a musician must learn the different chords in order to use them well, the writer must learn the different sentences to use them well, to get a feel for their shape and rhythm, like almost for the taste that they have in your mouth, or the way that the shape that your mouth makes when you are saying those sentences. I know that maybe sounds kind of like weird and mystical, but just practice saying a couple of sentences and paying attention to, you know, the shape and form that your mouth takes. Right? You can develop a sense right of the bold and clear, straightforward drama of the simple sentence, or the more like, you know, subtle and complex and suggestive melody of the complex sentence. What I just said. Sorry. The full drama of the simple sentence and the complex melody of the complex sentence. All right. So, now that we know, right, the different types, how do we use them well? Well, one way is through variation. Now, Dr. Moran, at the very, very beginning of this colloquium, talked about not being boring, and then Dr. Baldwin talked about being kind to your reader. So, one way to do this is to vary your sentence. It's a way of being interesting, right? It keeps the reader engaged and excited, and it's kind to them as well. For variety, as Mrs. Cohen mentioned, last week brings delight. So let's look at the first paragraph on the handout there. I have, Homer is a great poet. Homer wrote the Iliad. Achilles is one of the main characters in the Iliad. Agamemnon took Achilles' girl. This action made Achilles angry. A good leader does not anger his soldiers. Agamemnon is a bad leader. Okay, so talk to me about this paragraph. What do you think about the sentences? What kind are they? What effect do they have? Sorry?
Simple.
Okay, all simple, good. Okay, this. How do you feel as a reader? Okay, listening to a caveman. I like that. It's a good image. Okay. Yeah, there's something kind of boring about it, right? Bam, 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 bam. It's like I'm hitting the same note over and over and over and over and over and over again. Right, and a musician doesn't do that, right? You don't sit, you know, at your piano and play, you know, C over and over and over and over and over again, right? That would drive someone mad. It's actually about the very variety of notes and chords that creates the melody. So you want to do this with your sentences. There are lots of different ways of varying sentence structure. You can vary within sentences like we did with the simple sentence at the very beginning, right, where I put a prepositional phrase or a participial phrase, you know, at the beginning, at the middle, or the end. You can play with that. You could put it in all of those locations in one sentence if you wanted to, in if it made sense. You can vary the length of your sentences as well, right? You can have a really, really, really long sentence and then a really short sentence following it. And you can also, of course, vary the types of sentences, the simple and the complex, the compound and the complex, compound complex sentence. See, that one's hard. It's hard to say. All right. Now, since we kind of just picked on the short and simple sentence a little bit, right, making you sound like a caveman, a little bit boring, but I want to show you how powerful they can be and how flexible, because you can actually do a lot with a simple sentence. It can be very effective after a series of compound sentences or complex sentences or even longer simple sentences. All right, so let's take a look at the second paragraph in the handout. So, plausible reasons have never been lacking for putting off all merely cultural activities until some imminent danger has been averted or some crying injustice put right. But humanity long ago chose to neglect those plausible reasons. They wanted knowledge and beauty now and would not wait for the suitable moment that never comes. The insects have chosen a different line. They have sought first the material welfare and security of the hive and presumably have their reward. Men are different. They propound mathematical theorems in beleaguered cities, conduct metaphysical arguments in condemned cells, make jokes on scaffolds, discuss the last new poem while advancing to the walls of Quebec, and comb their hair at Thermopylae. I love that one. This is not panache, it is our nature. Okay, so just a little bit of background for this to make sense. In this essay, C.S. Lewis is defending the pursuit of learning during wartime. And he points out that really there is no ideal time for learning because there are always going to be demands and distractions, always urgent crises to deal with. Right? If we wait for the perfect ideal time to pursue education, it'll never happen. I thought this was an appropriate passage for you all here at UD because at some point in your life, you probably have to defend, right, your decision to attend a liberal arts school like UD. Why would you read Homer or Plato or Dante when you could be out in the real world, right, solving real problems, making money, helping other people improve their lives economically and politically. So all important things. Okay, so much for the background of this little essay. Let's look at the sentences. This passage actually gives us really extraordinary variety in the length and the structure. So we begin with a complex sentence, which has an independent clause. Reasons have never been lacking. And then two dependent clauses. Imminent danger has been averted, injustice put right. Now this is an appropriate use of the complex sentence because he's talking about the idea, right, pursuing cultural activities, education and learning, is dependent on averting danger and rectifying justice. Right? So the idea is, right, I can't actually study until I do all of these other things. So they're sort of dependent. The studying is dependent on fixing all of the problems of the world, and then I can go study. So this is a hierarchical idea, right? Kind of dependency. It needs a hierarchical sentence. It needs a complex. Now the next sentence, though, is a simple, right? One predication. But humanity chose to neglect. Now the but there, right? This is a coordinate conjunction. But indicates a shift or change in the argument. So he's just told us, right, there are all these reasons to delay education, but humanity, right, has chosen to neglect those reasons. So you can see, right, there's a shift in the argument is reflected in the shift in the sentence structure. We've moved from a complex sentence to a simple sentence, just as we've moved, right, from one idea to the next. Right, we then have another simple sentence that explains that men pursue knowledge and beauty and do not wait for the suitable moment. And here again we have one subject but two verbs. But I think this is still a simple sentence. It's a single predication. Now then we have a compound sentence that is about the insects who choose differently. They focus on material welfare and security. So we have two clauses, right? The insects choosing differently, right? And then they're focusing on material welfare. Now here both these clauses are joined by a semicolon, which is a perfectly fine way to join, to use for a compound sentence. So again, right, we're shifting from men to insects, and so we're shifting from a simple sentence to a compound sentence. Okay, now here we get the climax. Men are different. It's about as short and simple as you can get, right? Three words. But the very shortness of the sentence underscores the drama of the claim. It's a kind of ringing declaration. Lewis could have left this sentence out and just said, after talking about insects, men propound mathematical theorems in beleaguered cities, etc. That would have been just fine. But instead he uses the short and simple sentence to emphatically emphasize the difference between insects and men. Again, right, this difference is highlighted in the kinds of sentences that he's using, right? He's varying his sentences very deliberately and intentionally for good reasons. Right, there's no question, no suggestion, no insinuation that men are different. Nope, we are just told straight up, directly. Right. So then immediately after this sentence, we get a long, simple sentence. So again, I just want to show you, right, this is what the simple sentence can do. It can give you this accumulation of evidence and example of how men are different. Right? They propound mathematical theories, conduct metaphysical arguments, make jokes, discuss poetry, and comb their hair. Lots and lots and lots and lots of things, added out and added on. All in a simple sentence. Now, at the very end, though, right, we are brought to an abrupt halt by a compound sentence, but a very, very short and direct compound sentence. Right? It is not panache. It is our nature. Sort of, you know, again, we stop there. It's a simple declaration of fact. We are told it is not this, and it is this. So we're sort of building up, and then stop. And it kind of hangs there in suspense. And it's really dramatic and really memorable. All right. So I want to show you one more example that I think is a little bit simpler, a little bit less going on. So this is from Jane Austen's Mansfield Park. And I should credit Mrs. Cohen, who actually found this passage for me. So, when it came to the moment of parting, he would take her hand, he would not be denied it. He said nothing, however, or nothing that she heard, and when he had left the room, she was better pleased that such a token of friendship had passed. On the morrow, the Crawfords were gone. Now, how many of you have read Mansfield Park? Okay, so really all you need to know, Fanny Price is the main character. She's being wooed by an unwanted suitor, Henry Crawford. So we can see it, this long, compound, complex sentence here is emphasizing Henry's agency and his insistence. Like he would, you know, the repetition suggests, right, he kind of keeps reaching out and grabbing her hand, maybe she's pulling back. Right. So that's the very first part of this compound sentence. Now the second part, after the semicolon, with the however marks a shift. He said nothing or nothing that she heard, and because of that basically, right, she was better pleased. So we can see that the complexity of this sentence structure reflects the complexity of Fanny's feelings. Now, at first she's kind of agitated and upset, and then she's pleased. And we have a really complex sentence reflecting that complex state. Then after that, right, we get this final short sentence, statement of fact. Crawfords have left, right? The Crawfords were gone. Well, what do we make of that? What does Fanny make of that? We're not really sure, right? So after all that agitation and pleasure, we have a straightforward declaration, and again, that has that ringing reverberation, as the previous short sentences did. The Crawfords were gone. It's really dramatic. Austen doesn't explain, you know, she's just not really going into why Fanny's upset, or if this does upset Fanny, or if this makes Fanny happy. She doesn't, no. She just leaves it as it is. Now, note, right, that this simple sentence has the drama because it comes after the compound complex sentence, which was doing so many different things and kind of unsettling us. And then, bam, we hit the short sentence. So, to end, one of the reasons that I gave you these examples is to encourage imitation. Now, imitation is not plagiarism, right? You're not taking the words or ideas of another author, but you can imitate their structure. So we just saw, right, how Lewis used, you know, a three-word sentence really, really beautifully and powerfully. They are different. So identify that and try it out in your own writing. Right? We saw how Austin basically, I forgot to mention that short sentence is its own paragraph, right? So it's really, really set aside. You know, maybe you could even go that far with the short sentence. I would, again, I think it would depend on where you are in your writing and who you're writing for. But you could play around with that. Right, so just be on the lookout for good sentences as you read some of the greatest works in the Western tradition and start to imitate them. The core is a treasure trove of great sentences. Put them to use to help you become a better writer. Thank you. Okay. Well, I think we have a little time for questions, if anybody has. Yeah?
The last passage, how did you label that? Is it sort of like a double compound complex sentence?
The Mansfield Park one? Okay, yeah. I know I did. I sort of rushed over that sentence for time, but I think that's a great question. Yeah, I'd say compound. It's a compound complex sentence. Excuse me, because the semicolon there is joining two independent clauses. He would take her hand is the first one, and then he said nothing. So we have at least two independent clauses, and then I think we actually have a third with she was better pleased as well. So I think we have three independent clauses, maybe four if you count the second he would. And then we have when it came to the moment of parting, a dependent clause. And then when he had left the room, another dependent clause. And then that such a token of friendship had passed. So we have three dependent clauses and three independent clauses, all working together. And you could see, right, how very easily that could turn into absolute chaos in the hands of someone who doesn't quite know what they're doing, right? But Austin is such, you know, she's so masterful that you read that whole sentence and it's not, it maybe is confusing because she's trying to confuse you. You're agitated and then pleased with Fanny. Okay. But that was a great question. That's a really tricky sentence. Okay. Any other questions? Thank you.
If you all would just give us that to sign in at the sign-in sheet. Okay.